Joe Biden is the president-elect of the United States with a record-breaking nearly 80 million votes in the 2020 election. Our guest on this episode of The War Room at American Bridge is John Anzalone, one of the leading Democratic pollsters in the nation and the chief pollster of the Biden for President campaign. Welcome back to The War Room at American Bridge. I'm your host, David Brock, co-founder of American Bridge 21st Century. Joining us today is John Anzalone, partner at ALG Research, one of the premier Democratic polling firms in the country. In 1987, he started his political career as a staffer to Joe Biden for president in Iowa. At ALG, he has worked for the last four Democratic presidential campaigns and is the pollster to governors, senators, members of Congress, and many more. This year, he served as chief pollster to President-elect Joe Biden. Welcome to the War Room, John. So, John, just to start, you have a long and kind of interesting history with Joe Biden. I was wondering if you could just tell us about that to kind of frame our conversation before we talk about 2020.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's become bookends, David. I was a 23-year-old guy, you know, not far out of college. And I was the first kind of organizer in Iowa for his 88 presidential campaign. So that meant it was February of 1987 in Iowa. I drove out there met a guy named Bruce Keppel, who was another guy on the ground. And for literally for months, it was Bruce and I living out of his parents' basement, kind of running the campaign in the sense of logistics. Biden would come in and we'd put together events. And that was before David Wilhelm, who I worked for at the time at Citizens for Tax Justice and the AFL-CIO. And then he came a month or so later as our leader and campaign manager. And that campaign was just filled with some amazing people. Larry Grislano, who became one of Obama's big guys. But the thing I can say about that experience was he was the best boss ever. He was a guy who, at 23 years old, when you were in his presence, he treated you like you were the most special person in the world. And, you know, you've heard about Joe Biden's, you know, kindness and compassion and empathy. That was true back in 1987. It is true now. He just made you feel important and special, and he interacted with you. And that was just, you know, it was forever an important time in my life. We were there for 7 months before that campaign ended. But he has said this before, once you become part of the Biden family, you are forever part of the Biden family. So to be able to reconnect here over the last 2 years at kind of a senior role has been really, really quite special for me.
So people are still sorting out kind of what happened in this election. And I want to just try to shed a little light on that for the audience, focusing on the so-called three blue wall states that were essential to the win and that you knew from day one were essential. So how did Biden put together his winning coalition in those states? Was it different at all from the Obama coalition? And where did he outperform Hillary?
I think that this is really an important question and analysis, because I think from the very beginning, one of the things that the Biden campaign did was we were not going to give up on any voter, right? We were going to go after not only our base and persuadable voters, but also cut the margins in the Trump base. And that became really important for what we did and our allies like American Bridge did. And so we were going to treat our base voters like African Americans as persuadable voters, right? We were not going to treat them like GOTV voters. We believe that we had to not communicate with them for 6 months and give them a reason to vote for Joe Biden, what his agenda and vision was, just like persuadable white voters. But the other thing is it's important, and Michigan's a good example where I do Whitmer's polling and I grew up and went to college there, is that in June, when we started communicating in Michigan, we started in Detroit and Traverse City, the media market of Traverse City. Again, a good illustration that we were going to go after those hard to reach kind of Republican rural voters. And then we filled in there and went in all the other media markets. But the point is that we weren't going to give up on any voter. And that was really important for us, because we believed that to cut the margins in Trump territory just a little bit over a lot of counties would help us with our victory. And of course, that's what American Bridge did, right? They took 70 counties where Trump had huge margins, understanding if you just cut those margins 3 or 4 percentage points times those 70 counties, all of a sudden you will put together a victory. The other thing that I think is really important about our coalition is Biden had a different coalition than almost any modern Democratic nominee. He won independents. He won suburbanites. He won white college educated voters. And he cut Trump's margin in half with seniors. But those first three groups, independents, white college educated voters, and suburbanites, are groups that not only Trump won, but Romney won. And that usually surprises people. But that was, again, the power of Joe Biden being a moderate, not being scary. People knew him and having his experience that he, in fact, turned out to be the right candidate at the right time to beat someone like Trump.
How did Biden do with the black vote in the major cities in these three states? Because that was an issue for Hillary.
I mean, I think some of that is being sorted out. I think that there's a couple things you have to put the African-American vote in context. One is, again, can't take it for granted. That's really important. But two, to understand that some of the problems that Democrats have been having with African-American votes, where we used to get in the mid-90s, right, or where Obama set the bar, is not the case anymore. And so I don't think that there was a Joe Biden problem within the black community or with younger black men. I think that this predates Biden and predates probably a little bit, at least Hillary Clinton. So what you saw in the exit polls was Biden basically got the same percentage with African-American and Latino that Hillary did. But Trump got a few extra points higher. So they were coming out of third party, et cetera. Now, the absolute number was much bigger, right? And so that's a good thing. I think that there's work to do. There's always work to do. Again, why we treated all people of color as persuadable voters and not GOTV targets. And I think that you're going to see once all the dust settles that there's African-American communities in Detroit that acted differently, if you will, or voted differently than African-American communities in Charlotte or African-American communities in Atlanta or DeKalb County. We tend to want to believe that African-Americans are homogeneous. And guess what? Demographically, by age and by gender and by geography, it's not the case.
So you touched on this a little bit, but I want to just go a little bit further into the source of Biden's appeal in these states and generally. What messages did you see that were working? And there's this at least media narrative out there that I don't know if it hurt Biden, but certainly down ballot some of the Republican narratives about law and order and defunding the police hurt the party. What were you seeing in your polling, and what was working, and what was problematic, if anything?
First of all, people just their first kind of thing about Joe Biden, one of the main reasons that they liked him, was that he had experience, and that filled a void that we saw, you know, with Trump failing in his first major crisis on COVID, right? He didn't have the experience to handle it. And people felt that Joe Biden did have the experience. And so on a qualitative front, the foundation in some ways was his experience. We didn't have to message on that, although he had a lot of plans. But I think that there's also a couple other things is that one, again, people felt that Joe Biden had empathy and compassion and was a good man and a relatable person. And again, that filled the void of one of Trump's biggest weaknesses. They didn't think he was a good guy. His behavior was bad. He was a bully, and that was a problem. But on the pure message side of it, I think one of the things that we always felt we had to do was compete on the economic side of it, that we were not going to cede the ground, that he was a business guy who was going to save the economy. And therefore, we put a lot of emphasis on Joe Biden's vision and plan and agenda for working families and small businesses. And we fought on that front so people knew what to expect when he was president on what he would do for them, and he would fight for them. And the other thing I think that is really important, and you hear Joe Biden talk about it a lot because he believes in it, is unity. That he was going to be the person who could bring people together and heal the nation to get things done. And that was, at the end of the day, probably what voters most connected Joe Biden with in this incredibly divisive time, that he was someone who could bring this country together, heal it. And this is important to get things done. It wasn't just enough for the kumbaya, if you will, of unity. It was in the effort to get things done for working families.
Before we leave the presidential race, I just want to drill down a little bit more on these ex-urban and rural voters, which, as you mentioned, was the focus of American Bridges' swing state project.
Yeah.
And as Biden's pollster, you were obviously walled off from working with a super PAC like Bridge, but I'm sure you were watching what you're doing. Your firm was intricately involved in our efforts, and with the wall now down, I was wondering if we could just talk a little bit about American Bridges' specific approach and whether you think that made a difference in the election.
I think it was critical, and I think that the proof is in the pudding. First of all, again, in those three states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, we certainly saw again, and you can see it in the maps, that Joe Biden was narrowing the margins, even if it was a small narrowing. In, you know, three states that Hillary lost by 60,000 votes, if you take a look at your 70 counties, and on average, you narrowed the margin by 3%, do the math. That is a really big universe of voter. The other thing is, again, just knowing Michigan, there were 11, we saw 11 counties, Trump counties, where Biden outperformed the margin by 5 points or more, and even some bigger counties like Kent. So we think that it was critical. Again, we felt that not only was Biden the right type of person to talk to those small and rural areas because he wasn't scary. People didn't think he was a radical, right? They knew him at a personal level, not only from vice president, but also in kind of, you know, the life and tragedies that he had gone through. So your effort filling a void. Often in these rural areas, what we see is the Republicans have a message and they have a lot of communication, and there is not a countervailing message. And I think that your program proved that there has to be a countervailing message about either the opponent, meaning Trump, and or the candidate, meaning Biden, which we did ourselves.
Let me just ask you one more question on 2020 before we go to Georgia. This was a decisive victory for Joe Biden. And yet there seemed to be relatively few coattails. So from where you sit, what happened down ballot?
I think that there's a couple dynamics that are important. Some of these are just theories. I'm not sure we can all prove them with diagnostics. But one is that I do think that the media narrative that Biden was so far ahead maybe created a psychological narrative underneath about checks and balances, that, hey, they were comfortable with Biden. You had Nancy Pelosi in the House. Hey, maybe it's really important for there to be checks and balances at the congressional level and other levels. That's number one. I think that there's validity in that. The second, and I think that this is actually really important, people did not feel that Joe Biden was a radical. They didn't feel like he was going to defund the police. They didn't think that, you know, he was going to raise their taxes. They didn't think he was a socialist. But in general, those arguments do work generically on Democrats, and they certainly work generically on congressional Democrats. And so I do think that, you know, in some ways, Biden had some Teflon, but those bullets ricocheted and did penetrate to the congressional Democrats. And I think that, you know, there was without a doubt some damage done by that.
So let's go to Georgia. You know a lot about the state. What would you say, or if there are any lessons from the campaign you just ran for Georgia, and what do you see as the lay of the land there?
I think that there's it very much, I think, dovetails with what you were doing in the three upper Midwest states. Nate Cohn put out a map of Georgia where Biden, again, did better in terms of performance. And you would think that it's just isolated in Fulton and DeKalb, which is basically the urban areas, and the suburban areas of Gwinnett and Cobb. Now, DeKalb is actually suburban, but almost African-American suburban, right? But what you see in this map is in the northern and southern, really small town rural counties, there's a lot of light blue, meaning that what did Biden do? He narrowed the Trump margins from 2016, including in some of those suburban areas of Savannah and Augusta, et cetera, and Macon. On the margins, small, it doesn't matter, 2 or 3 or 4 percentage points where he just did, you know, cut the margins from Trump's 2016, that really matters when you win by 13 or 14,000 votes. So yes, the Atlanta urban and suburban areas, super important, but it's going to look like also just narrowing the margins in some of these small and rural counties is going to make a difference as well.
So John, can you handicap the race a little bit and tell us what you think our chances are?
You know, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution came out with a poll that showed what we've always seen, what we saw before the November election, which is both of these races, the Warnock race against Loeffler and the Ossoff race against Perdue, are very competitive and coin tosses at this time. I think Warnock was down by 1 in the Atlanta Journal poll. I think Ossoff was down by several points. And again, the dynamics were different there because it was a jungle primary. Loeffler and the Republican Collins were fighting each other. And so Warnock really didn't get a lot of negatives, where the Perdue-Ossoff race was very much engaged for a long time. I think that we're going to see the dynamics being not unlike what you need. I mean, Joe Biden showed us what you have to do to win, right? Stacey Abrams, quite frankly, showed us very much what you have to do to win. There's always this 30-30 rule in Georgia that you have to try to get African-Americans to be as close to 30% of the electorate. And the Democratic candidate has to get about 30 or 31% of the white vote. What I think that is really important is that there's also one of the fastest rising Hispanic and Asian populations in Georgia. We saw that in the turnout numbers. Also, you have suburban Atlanta, college-educated women, higher-income women, white women, et cetera, that are performing just like other suburban women across the country, whether they live in, you know, Oakland County, Michigan, or other places. And so this is a very competitive state, and I think that we're going to see this be very competitive to the very end.
So as we wrap up, you're a preeminent pollster. I have to ask you a little bit about the polling in this cycle. Your campaign was probably smartly warning that the election was closer than what public polling was showing. Tell us a little bit about what you think went right and wrong there and what you knew and what was going on with the public polling.
I think the first thing is that, you know, we have to acknowledge that this is a very tough industry, right? With incredibly low response rates, with, you know, ways in which we get interviews. We're always working hard. We're always innovating, and we're never going to give up. But public opinion research is really important. It's important to the role of not only campaigns, but also policy leaders in terms of when they go into legislative sessions and things like that. I think that naturally we tend to always have some of this a little bit overblown. We're going to see once the final numbers come in that, again, it wasn't as bad as people said the day after election or the week after the election. The other thing that I think is just you need to acknowledge is that there is some Trump interference in polling, you know, in 16 and 20, but in 18, we're, you know, pollsters and public pollsters were very much on. The other thing I think that you have to acknowledge is that media firms don't often, you know, their public polling is different from what we do internally. We spend a lot of money. We spend a lot of, you know, time on methodology. If you will, the cook in the kitchen is just a little different than what you're doing for public media polls. And so, you know, their problems get conflated with our problems a little bit more than is probably fair. But at the same time, we know we have to work really hard to get it done. Here's one other thing I would say is also just in the analysis. For example, you know, if you're in a battleground state, a Democrat basically gets what they poll. And so it was very important for us to have Joe Biden at 49, 50, 51 in the states that we needed him to be. And we knew he probably wouldn't get any more. Well, you know, again, the public polls tend to look at the margins and sell the margins in the media consumption narrative, which is not what we do when we analyze our polls. You could be up a couple points, for example, Cale Cunningham in North Carolina, but if he was at 47 in a poll, we know he's going to lose. And so that's just, you know, that's something that's never going to get rectified in terms of the narrative of public polling.
All right. Well, thanks, John, and thanks for running a great race for us.
Thanks for what you all have done at American Bridge. It's so incredibly important, and it's going to be important for the future.
John, thanks so much for joining us today. We look forward to having you on again. For more information on American Bridge, check out AmericanBridgePAC.org. Check back for more podcasts and information in the aftermath of the 2020 election. Until next time, I'm David Brock. Thanks for listening to The War Room at American Bridge.